In this episode, we're going to talk about two particular things, browser add-ons and useful websites. And this is not going to be everything that we know. This is a small collection of all the best tried and true stuff that we've come over that we use ourselves.
Yeah, we use a lot of different websites. And as Ludwig just said, this is just a small selection.
I sent two units. They're bringing her down now.
No, Lieutenant, your men are already dead.
The future is approaching faster than ever.
Technological change is speeding up, and your already maladapted evolutionary mismatches are multiplying.
In the future, the current version of you is already dead. The way around that is to keep learning, keep evolving, mentally, psychologically, physically, and financially.
Okay, so let's start with the browser add-ons, beginning with uBlock Origin. This is the most popular ad blocker, I believe. And if you have ads on the internet, then, you know, there's no need to have that. Just install this browser add-on and you will stop seeing ads everywhere. And before we go on, we should also say that we will provide links to all of these things in our newsletter.
Yeah, so remember to subscribe to the newsletter unless you have already.
Yeah. Okay, so next one, that's Firebug. And this is like, you can see the web design on the internet. You can select a link of code on a website, or you can select a text or a specific element of a website. And then what this will do is that you can see how they've created the website, what kind of theme they're using, the font they're using, and the particular element like HTML language. And this is good if you want to, either if you're just interested in this or you want to understand how to do web design and learn this from scratch.
Right when you told me how to design my website, I started using Firebug, but pretty soon I just lost interest in doing these things myself and just left my homepage as it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe not your top priority to do this. I don't do it myself either.
Oh, but not anymore. I thought you used it pretty extensively a couple of years back.
Yeah, I definitely did. That's how I learned to do CSS and HTML and PHP. Those are the three main programming languages you need to know if you want to like do your own stuff on the internet, like a website or design or how it looks on the interface or like the database and stuff like that. It's not hard to learn. You can learn it yourself and you can use this Firebug to learn it.
But nowadays you typically use templates and things that are ready made, right?
Yes, exactly. But the point is that I know how to do it myself if I have to. And if there's a problem, I can usually solve it myself.
Yeah, great. And then on to one of my absolute favorites, and it's LastPass. I'm sure there are a lot of different sites and tools to keep track of all your different passwords, but I've come to like LastPass. So what you have is a single master password to start LastPass, of course. One thing that's particularly good with LastPass is that it has a password challenge that challenges you to have as strong passwords as possible, and you can have LastPass generate passwords for you that are just impossible to remember. And regularly, it asks you whether you want to change all your passwords to different things and very strange and weird and complex passwords. And then it automatically logs into every site you have passwords to and changes the passwords.
Oh, that's very useful. I didn't know it had that feature or function. I use it myself also, but I didn't know you could do that. That's very good. I think another thing about LastPass is that it can also autofill forms for you.
Yes.
That's also a useful function. Can it do anything else?
Nothing that I can think of right now, but I think there are two things people tend to do wrongly or ineffectively with their passwords. One is, of course, that they are too easy because you want to remember them yourself. And the second one is that you tend to, even if you have a complex password, that you use the same one for a lot of different sites. With LastPass, you have just these weird strings of signs and different for every site.
Okay. Is there anything else, any other browser extension that you use that you want to recommend?
No, not at this moment.
Yeah, me neither. In that case, let's move on to useful websites. And I will take one here that we don't have it listed, but I want to say it anyway, because we were talking about programming languages before. So a really good website if you want to learn basic programming is V3 Schools, W3 Schools.
All right, so that would be W3, that's like World Wide Web, www, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a really good one.
All right. Just when you mentioned this site, have you checked Codecademy's programming education and programming courses?
No, I have. I know it's very good. And I know, for example, when we talked to Casey Goss, I know he used that to learn programming. And he's obviously a lot better than I am at it. I'm only a beginner.
For a while, I actually used Khan Academy. They at least had a course in JavaScript that I followed. And it was very pedagogical. And but a lot of people told me that I probably should go to Codecademy instead, that, because it's more specialized.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know about that. But what I do know is that there is a distinction between these three. And W3 Schools is like kind of like GitHub or whatever, where you have instructions for how to do different things. So you can like look it up. But I don't believe...
Rather than just generally learning coding.
Yeah, it's not... I don't think it's like courses. I think it's just kind of like a Wikipedia. So it's like, do you want to bold an element on your website? Yes, I do. Then this is the HTML code that you use.
All right, that sounds really useful. So we'll add the link.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. This is a really good website that I use a lot, especially lately, that I've been doing a lot of boring practical work where I've needed to concentrate. And the website is Noisely. And it's a website that lets you listen to different ambient sounds. It's not music or anything. It just lets you engineer your background surrounding noise. Like you can have everything from rain to white noise to like a cafe to thunder to a fan that's circulating in the background. You can have these different things. And then you can randomize these. And it's very nice and it's free.
Is there any downside to it? Is there... Well, you said it's free, but I hope there aren't any audio-based ads in it.
No. I don't know anything bad about it.
So what's your favorite ambient noise and for which occasion?
I use these mostly when I'm working, and I have two favorites here. One is rain, and another one is like a leafy grass noise. I don't know what it's called, but it's like wind and then leaves.
Wind blowing in the leaves, yeah. in the treetops.
Yeah.
Okay. I often search for like... whale sounds and marine sounds, but I've never really found anything really good on YouTube, so I'll definitely check out Noisely.
Yeah, so I like that. And then let's go to another website that probably everyone who listens knows, and this is WikiHow. WikiHow is a surprisingly good website if you want to find tutorials for everything that's like a complex task where you have to do 10, 20, 30 different steps. Everything from how to write a book to how to set up a website to set up a printer to, you know, everything practical that you would want to know. And if you don't know it, you can check it out here.
So even physical stuff like putting together an IKEA flat furniture.
I haven't tried it, but I would think so, yeah. They have everything. And it can be something like how to build a chair or how to build a house. You know, they have all of these different things. So usually when I'm confused about learning something, and you know I'm not the most technical person, so I usually really need these kind of guides. And then you can often find a good starting template at WikiHow, and then you just scroll through that and write down the steps and do it.
That sounds really good as well. I typically just search, I Google it on random, and I often end up somewhere on YouTube trying to browse like 10 or 20 different videos that aren't really that good. WikiHow sounds like the perfect place for me.
I don't know about that. You're pretty technical when it comes to putting things together.
I think maybe it's just that I don't Google stuff that often. That has put me in this cul-de-sac where I don't have a method for it, but I'll write down WikiHow and make sure that's where I check first.
Yeah, anyway, that's a good place to just get a starting checklist for difficult stuff. Then the next one is Academy of Achievement. This is a website where you can read long-form written interviews with really interesting people from America over the last maybe 30 years or something. They've collected a lot of interesting people who have been very successful in different fields, and it's everything from different scientists in different branches of science, different Nobel Prize winners, and former presidents, you know, a lot of different, what you could call really successful or people who have achieved something particular. And then they talk about their life and different things. It's not always super practical, but it's really interesting to read. And if you like to read really long interviews that can be like 30 pages long, then you should check this out.
Is the site in itself, is it well structured? Is it easy to find things based on topic or time period?
I think so, yeah.
Do you have any particular inventor or author or business person to recommend?
There are two ones that start. I've read many of these because, you know, I like to read long form. But I know most people don't like that. But if you do, then this is a good resource. And two of them that I remember that stood out were Carlos Slim, the Mexican billionaire, and James Watson, the guy who invented or, you know, found the DNA helix, double helix, together with, what's the guy's name, Crick?
Crick.
Yeah.
And actually, if you go through the annals of history, you should find a woman there as well.
Oh, yeah, but she died.
Yeah, she never got really recognized, but she was the one actually identifying the key X-ray photograph.
Yeah. Very unlucky for her that she died at that moment. Yeah. That's how history works.
Do you remember whether it was Watson or Crick that got his epiphany on LSD?
No, I don't know.
One of them have...
He didn't mention it in the interview I read.
No, I think it was later on that he actually admitted.
Anyway, what I really like about these two guys, Watson and Crick, is that, especially Watson, whose interview I read, is that he's such an incredible contrarian.
Oh, okay.
He's a really, really contrarian thinker. And he has really unpopular opinions, which is really interesting. Everything from the bell curve, you know, normalization of IQ and stuff like that, to how government works, and like, he's really unpopular because of that. But often you have these traits where people dare to think really unpopular things, and that's often the people who make the important discoveries that helps the rest of mankind.
Interesting. All right, you have listed more websites than I have here, so let's move on to the next one.
Okay, the next one is Have I Been Pwned? I don't know how to pronounce this.
I guess it's a short version of pawned, like when you pawn stuff you can sell or rent out your... You can get money off of your stuff.
Right.
But I'm not sure if
that's been pwned. Have I been pwned? Anyway, this is a website where you can type in one of your email accounts and see if it's been if its data has been breached in some sort of hacker attack.
Have you tried it?
Yeah, I've tried it.
Have you ever had your email hacked?
Well, you know, it doesn't say if your email has been hacked, but it does say if it's been in some form of database, and they make a massive cross-reference from like all the big ones. And then you can see if it's been lost or if any one of these websites have been hacked and if your email has been taken. And what this means is that it's probably put on some spam list that they use. And yes, it's happened to one of my emails.
Okay, and what kind of corrective action can you take? Do you change emails or do you contact the databases, or what can you do with this information?
Yes, as you see, I have listed two other website recommendations here, and that's like a follow-up to this. So if your email has been pwned, then
P-W-N-E-D.
So the next website is called Just Delete Me, and what it does is that it removes your email registration and account information from many of the most popular websites, forums, and product companies.
All right, so and that sounds like a pretty good recommendation, like a CTA, right after listening to this. Just go into Just Delete Me, and I guess you just check a box or something and make sure they delete you from all of these
records. Exactly. Because if you want to do it manually, then that's probably going to take you like an hour or two or three or four, depending on how many places you're in. But this can save you a lot of time.
Yeah, I had an idea once. This was before really good spam filters in email accounts. And I started getting annoyed with all this spam, not least for like, you know, Viagra and whatever. And no, it had nothing to do with which websites I had visited. Anyway, I started replying to these emails, which is a complete newbie mistake.
So how long ago was this?
18, 20 years, something like that.
Okay, so it was in the very beginning of the internet.
Yeah. So I mean, there was a link that said unsubscribe. Just click here to unsubscribe. My God, did I get emails after that? Because that confirmed that my email was live. So this is really a really high quality email that they could sell to even more spammers.
Okay. Have you ever gotten one of those Nigeria spam mails, by the way?
Yeah, several.
Yeah, me too. I once started messing with one guy who was like that. It was really funny.
Yeah, me too.
Oh.
All right. And then it's the site Unroll Me.
Yes, this can be taken as the second corrective step. So if your website has been pwned, then, you know, first go to the Just Delete Me site and remove that. And then, like you were saying, you can be put on all these different spam lists. And usually you will be put on these spam lists because your email has been hacked or breached somehow. So you never gave your consent to being on all these crazy spam or email lists, but they've found you somehow and just added you. And what you can do is you can use this next site, Unroll Me. And what it does is that it unsubscribes from all sort of databases and email newsletters in bulk. So instead of clicking unsubscribe to, you know, I don't know how many you might have, but when you use the service Unsubscribe Me, Unroll Me, I mean, when you use this, you will see that you've been put on hundreds of lists, and then you can unsubscribe from all the bad ones in bulk.
I think I'm the one learning a lot of stuff today, because I'm definitely going to use Unroll Me.
Part of my monthly routine.
I think I have a lot of filters in my Gmail that takes care of this. Well, actually, it doesn't take care of it, but it masks it. So I get a lot of emails that Gmail filters out and deletes or puts in spam or something like that. But would be much better if I just hit unsubscribe.
Yeah, I think you should do both. And speaking of what you're saying now, what you should also do every now and then, maybe, I don't know, once per year or something, you should delete old emails, because that slows down your inbox and it makes you load the page slower and you lose time. So you can do this too.
Yeah, my inbox is very unruly. I have over 1,000 unread emails and I don't know, 40,000 mails in my inbox, and I don't dare to delete them.
But doesn't that make you extremely slow?
Yes.
Because for me, I had many thousands. I didn't have 40,000, but I had a lot of many. I have more than 5,000, I remember. And I deleted almost all of them. And then my inbox became much faster.
The problem is that I have very important email conversations and evidence, if you will, that could be important. That's the problem. It could be important, but I'm not sure. And it could be like million kroner and even million dollar negotiations and agreements that I need the paper trail.
That's very tricky. I don't have any advice for you, but I think if you're listening to this now, I think it's a good kind of routine or ritual to do this maybe once per year, because then you can avoid this problem.
Yeah, and another good routine is if you have very important documents, to actually save them somewhere in a structured way, and also to print them out in hard copy and keep them in a bank vault.
Yeah, commonplace is a really good method for this.
So my problem is that I grew up information-wise in a corporate environment, which meant that I had unlimited resources in terms of speed and databases and everything, which made me lazy and unstructured.
Pretty interesting. I haven't thought about that. Makes sense. Okay, so let's take three health-related websites. And these are like one-purpose websites. They're not big websites. You just go to them for one reason. And the three health websites are, number one, Calculator BMI. If this is interesting or you just want to try it, you can do this. And you just Google calculate BMI and you will find a tool for that. The second one is called testosterone or hormone converter. And it, you know, there are different ways of measuring hormones depending on which country you do your tests in. And what this does is that you can convert between the different metrics and see what you get if you're confused. So testosterone converter. And then finally is examine. And here you can find scientific, like all the scientific studies on a supplement or a test or anything.
I really want to emphasize the importance of examine. If you get bro science from a friend or just somebody online claiming evidence for anything health-related or nutrition-related, then you should always go to examine and see what the actual scientific evidence is for these claims.
Have you been reading about protein powder on examine?
No, but you know our common friend Daniel Richter,
yeah.
He reads everything on protein powder.
Yeah, I mean, that's his job.
Yeah, so he relays the information and the findings to me. And basically, the final conclusion is protein powder doesn't really do anything more than ordinary food. And the timing and the amounts are, well, eat normally and a little more and you'll be fine.
I think the reason I asked about this is because I want to debunk a very important myth.
All right.
And that myth is that, you know, one of the key sales arguments that they use to sell protein powder, that is that your body needs so and so much protein and you're not getting it. So buy our protein powder, therefore. And one of the metrics that they like to use is that they say you need 3 times as much protein per kilo. So if I weigh 70 kilos, then I should have 210 grams of protein per day. And this is not true at all. You can get by on like 1.5 easily.
Yeah, you can actually, there are recommendations and what counts as starving protein-wise, etc. But many people can get by at 0.7 grams per kilo of body weight.
Yeah.
But the recommendation is slightly less than 1 gram. gram per kilogram.
Yeah. So what I want to emphasize here is that I'm not a professional at this, but I've done thorough personal experiments with this over many years, and I've found that it makes no difference for me over 1.5. So more than, if I weigh 70 kilos, that means I should have 100 grams of protein per day. Over that, I don't see any difference. If I have less, then it is a slight difference. However, I also want to mention something extra, which is that there is a difference between individuals in that some people can process more protein than other people can do. And that has to do with your digestion. So if you have a bad digestion, then you cannot process as much protein as someone who has a really good digestion.
Yeah, that's a very important point. Another point is that the body, and this is also individual, it differs in how it processes protein powder versus, for example, meat or fish or veggie-based proteins. And it seems as if you eat a steak or fish or real animal-based protein in its original form.
Or eggs.
Then you can eat a lot more per sitting. Whereas if you try to eat a lot of protein powder, some people just tend to get gassy instead. And it's burned for energy rather than used up as protein for building muscle.
That makes sense. I just want to make that final point that a lot of the people who are bodybuilders or professional, you know, like powerlifters or athletes or something, a lot of those people have by birth very good genetics and they have good digestion. And this allows them to process more protein than many other people can do. So some of those people can actually process even more than like 3 grams of protein per kilo, but most people cannot.
Yeah, I think there is some evidence for a slight increase in protein synthesis, no matter how much protein you add on. So you could actually eat 4 grams, 5 grams, 6 grams, but the incremental use is very, very small.
Okay.
And so we just finish this by saying that around 2 grams is probably definitely enough for all your purposes. Maybe not if you're going to compete in Mr. Olympia, but everything else.
Yeah. So we went on a bit of a rant there, but let's do a brief recap of the three health tools. They are, first, calculate your BMI. This is your body mass index. Second, check out the testosterone or hormone converter. And three, examine.com. Now let's move on to a few basic financial tools on the internet. The first one is an inflation calculator.
All right. And what's good with inflation calculator?
Well, you can select a time period and then you can check what the cumulative inflation has been over this time period. And then you can see what's the difference in how much was, say, $10 today worth back in 1970s.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting, not least just for personal use when you're discussing things with other generations.
Yeah, I guess you have memorized these numbers, but hasn't the inflation in the US since 1970 up to now, 2018, hasn't it been like 550% or something?
It could definitely be something like that. But I remember in round numbers what it's been various years and decades, but the actual compound effect, I couldn't say. But it could definitely be like 500% over that period.
Obviously, it's going to be a little bit different in every country, but I believe the cumulative number is roughly 500% in this time period.
Right now, they're talking about 1,000,000% inflation in Venezuela.
That's not the best example.
Per year.
That's because they're crazy Marxists. But then, inflation is important. And if you were born in 1970, then, you know, your money was worth a lot more and your salary was basically the same as it is now for most white-collar workers. So that means your purchasing power has been reduced by, like, at least two and a half times. Because the median salary has risen, but it hasn't risen even nearly enough to compensate for the cumulative inflation. And this is a very important takeaway.
Another interesting comparison in regards of purchasing power is that gold was pegged, the price was fixed at around $35 or $40 per ounce. And now it's trading at $1,200 per ounce. And since gold doesn't return anything, gold just stays gold, then you can measure the purchasing power of the dollar versus this fixed asset over that time. So from 1970 to 2018, the purchasing power changed, what is it, 30 times, more than 30 times, and that's 3,000%.
Yeah, that's a lot. Okay, so that was the first one, inflation calculator. It's just useful to use every once in a while if you're interested. And the second one is a compound interest calculator.
So the compound interest calculator is just an extremely simple matrix of various interest rates and time horizons, and tells you how much would a dollar grow over that time with that interest rate.
Yeah, exactly. This is not really sophisticated advice for a financial professional, but I mean, it's useful advice for most people to just take a look at it, do some basic calculations.
And then we have a couple of my favorites, which are goldprice.org, where you can just see the gold price in various currencies and time periods. And they actually have other precious metals as well, but goldprice.org. And then similar one for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies as well. And it's CoinDesk. And if you're interested in fundamental valuation information regarding US companies, Standard & Poor's 500, I think is all it looks at. It's called Shiller PE, S-H-I-L-L-E-R, Shiller PE. And on Shiller PE, you can find inflation, interest rates, earnings, and also Shiller's own special valuation metric, which is a cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, also called CAPE, C-A-P-E.
What is the difference between Shiller's PE cyclical versus a normal PE ratio?
A normal PE ratio just takes today's stock price and divides it with a 1 year earnings rate. So that could be how much profits is a certain company, or the average of a company in an index, how much is that profit for a given year? And you take the current stock price and divides it by that profit. So that tells you how many years profit the valuation is. And it's typically like 10 or 20 or 30 or something like that, depending on the growth. But the Shiller cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, it takes the last 10 years looking backwards, those profits, and adjusts them for inflation over that period. So you get an average of the already past period for earnings rather than looking forward a year. And you take today's price and divides it by that average earnings. And that means that you kind of erase the effects of the economic cycle. So it minimizes the risk of measuring the price earnings ratio at a peak or a trough of a cycle. So instead you get an average.
Okay, so that seems like a simpler way, or basically at least to cross-reference if you find something that's attractive based on, you know, if you want to use just PE ratio, then double check it with the Shiller.
Yeah, definitely. It's much more robust, but on the other hand, it's backward looking.
Okay, sweet. Let's go over the last couple of websites. Next one is Google Alerts. So if you haven't already set up this, what you want to do is you just go into Google Alerts, then you link it to your email account, and then you write the criteria for when you want to receive an email alert. And this can be for your own name, for a mispronunciation of your name, you know, to see if there's some PR or someone mentions you or whatever. And then you can respond to that if it's something useful. So that's one thing, just personal notifications. Another thing might be if you're interested in research in a particular field, then you write in the search terms or the things that you want to have in the headline of the article. But yeah, you can use it for a lot of interesting things, or also maybe job postings in specific areas. So say you want to, you know, get a job in some country or some city, then you can search for like IT engineer in San Francisco, and then you might see postings of that, whereas you might not find it otherwise. So those are three different ways: personal reasons, research, and job search. But you should beware of using too many search terms, because then you will receive too many emails. Okay, we go over to the next one, and that is everytimezone.com. And you can see what time it is all around the world to avoid confusing time zones.
Because that would never happen to us, right? When we schedule interviews in different time zones.
No, it's a very tricky thing.
Yeah, it's happened a couple of times for us personally. So this is a good site.
Yeah, and also I think one tricky thing is that when you have, what's it called in English? Daylight saving times.
Yeah.
When the day shifts forward an hour or two, an hour forward or backward. This is the sort of thing that always tricks me. You know how bad I am with holidays, and I'm also bad with this. So I'm always confused when it happened.
Yeah, and since everybody doesn't do it at the same time. It's doubly confusing.
Yeah. And then there's another website, which is called whichdateworks.com. And then what you do is you can schedule events and have it, cross-reference by multiple people so that everyone finds a date that works.
Yeah, these sites can be a bit tricky anyway, but it definitely beats just sending emails back and forth for a group and trying to find a date.
Definitely.
I've used Doodle as well. Doodle.
Oh, yeah.
Doodle. It works as well, but maybe I should give whichdateworks.com a try as well, because I'm not perfectly happy with Doodle.
This is not a situation I'm in too often, but the few times I have been, this has been useful. And then let's do the final two websites. 10fastfingers.com. And this is to see what your typing speed is. And it's pretty important that you have a fast typing speed, because you spend a lot of time in front of a computer. And if your typing speed is less than 50 words per minute, then you're very slow. You should at least have 70 words per minute. And you can do this by practicing like 10 minutes every day for a week.
All right. I'm not sure if I even dare try that one. But I'm...
You're definitely over that.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to say. But on the other hand, I have a little hard time seeing exactly how I would use it. But maybe I burst write. So I like write maybe two sentences that I know I want to write. But then I think a lot in between.
It can be the same for me. But the point, I think, is just that you don't want to be under 50 words per minute, because then you're a slow writer.
Yeah. All right.
The final website is Fiverr. This can be used for outsourcing cheap work. And it's best for design and basic stuff like proofreading or things that you might not have time to do yourself.
So how have you used Fiverr?
Mostly for cheap designs to produce a lot of different alternatives. So for example, say you're making a cover or something like that.
For a book.
Yeah, exactly. Or anything else. Then you might buy five different ones for just $5 or $10. And then they will produce different, how it can look.
Different versions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then hopefully you will find at least one of them that's good. You're probably not going to find very talented people, but you can find, the raw creativity. And then you can take the best version and have it send that to someone who is better, or use it yourself to improve on if you're good at design. So you find a version you like, and then you improve upon that with a higher quality service.
All right. And have you happened to try Upwork?
I actually haven't, but I know about it. It's recommended for more expensive stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I've used it, and I'm pretty happy about it, but it's definitely not $5 to $10 per project site.
No. All right. That's it. So let's do a brief recap that maybe the most important takeaway for some of the people listening could be to go to the Have I Been Pwned website to see if your email has been stolen. And then after that, go to the Just Delete Me site. And then finally go to the Unroll Me site to unsubscribe in bulk. And then that can prevent a lot of spam email. You might also want to check out your inbox and delete emails. And finally, we will provide a list of all of these things linked to all these websites and browsers in our newsletter. So be sure to subscribe to that if you're not already on it.
Yeah, and if you have a tool that you want to recommend, you can email us at admin.futureskillspodcast.com.
All right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
Bye.